Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 8th of November 2017. I'm Sue.
I'm Louise.
And I'm Phil.
And your sound engineers this week are John and Martin. This week we would like to welcome Edward Porter into the fold, and we hope that you will enjoy receiving your discs. Next, we'd like to say a very big thank you to Jean Jennings and Joan Simmons, who have kindly sent us a donation towards the funding of our Talking News and Magazine. And now, Louise will start us off with the news.
Brexit could help to save the ailing British pub industry by giving the UK controls over beer duty, a Conservative MP has claimed. Mike Wood said European Union legislation made it impossible for Britain to lower the amount of tax on beer sold in pubs. The Dudley South Brexit-backing MP, who is the chairman of the all-party parliamentary beer group, said there was a huge potential for policy changes that would benefit brewers in Britain after Britain leaves the bloc in March 2019. The high beer duty rates are cited as one of the main reasons why the British pub trade is struggling, with nearly 15 pubs a week going out of business in the UK. Mr. Wood said, "We are going to want to look at whether beer duty should be restricted altogether to reflect the particular contribution that sales in pubs make, and have a reduced rate of duty for the beer served in pubs and bars. Obviously, we cannot do that within the EU, but from spring 2019 that would be an option that would be available to the Treasury." He added, "At the moment, we can't legally charge different rates of tax for beer that is sold in pubs to what is sold in supermarkets. And it is difficult for us to give relief for medium-strength beers because, for example, the Belgians would argue we are discriminating against their stronger beers." Earlier this week, Mr. Wood chaired a parliamentary debate on the impact taxation was having on the beer and pub sector. He said, "The beer and brewing sector are very important to our economy, but also socially. They provide nearly a million jobs in this country, nearly half of which are for young people. They are one of our fastest growing export markets. It is really important, as we look ahead to the budget in a few weeks' time, that we make sure that both the beer industry and our local community pubs get the support they need. And that means not having overly punitive taxes. We want to make sure the Chancellor is listening to the concerns of all parties, as well, of course, our constituents, our brewers, our responsible drinkers, so that we get a fair deal for our pubs and for British beer. In Dudley South, more than 1,100 jobs are connected to the pub trade, contributing £37.2 million to the wider region's economy. The British Beer and Pub Association has launched a campaign urging ministers to cut beer tax. For more information, visit www.cutbeertax.co.uk.
A total of 5,000 people in Wolverhampton are suffering from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a leading doctor has revealed. The figure was released as part of the annual conference of city charity Compton Hospice. The conference, entitled Thinking Differently About Palliative and End-of-Life Care 2017, was held on Wednesday at Wolverhampton Science Park. The conference attracted dozens of healthcare professionals and saw keynote speakers deliver talks on a variety of topics. One of the speakers, Dr. Fran Hackack, consultant in palliative medicine, spoke on the impact of long-term respiratory conditions such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, otherwise known as COPD. Dr. Hackack revealed that there are 5,000 people in Wolverhampton with the condition. According to the British Lung Foundation, there is a higher proportion of people diagnosed with COPD in the north of the UK, Scotland, the northeast, northwest of England. Symptoms of the condition include breathlessness, coughing, depression, and anxiety, as well as panic attacks. Dr. Hackack told the conference that oxygen is not a suitable treatment for people suffering with breathlessness, and that the use of portable fans to blow air onto the face is a better solution. She said, "Oxygen does not do anything for breathlessness. Many patients say that during their periods of breathlessness, they want to open a window or feel a breeze on their face. This is because there are receptors within the skin of the face that when exposed to a breeze will combat the feelings of breathlessness. That's why we give out these fans to our patients. They're portable so that they can be put into handbags or pockets. The doctor also spoke about the importance of thinking about the future, even if people have long-term health problems. She said, often we have what is called prognostic paralysis, but what we should be focusing on is not the time of the life of the person and how long they have left, but the future they want and how we can help them achieve that. Be that being treated in hospital or a hospice or at home. Professor Kerry Thomas OBE opened the conference delivering a speech on how end-of-life care is everyone's business. She said, what we have found is that a more joined-up approach to end-of-life care, which puts the patient at the heart of everything we do, improves the quality of life for that patient and relieves pressure on services. Also referenced at the conference was Compton Hospice's ongoing consultation on its potential change of name.
Parents at Summerhill School in King Swinford have expressed outrage after finding out that CCTV has been installed in the pupils' toilets. Cameras were put in during the half-term holiday following some disappointing behaviour from students, including incidents of bullying and vandalism, according to a letter sent out by Executive Headmaster James Borkhead to parents and carers. But worried mums and dads say their children are so concerned about the possibility of being watched that they will not go to the toilet all day. One posted on Facebook, my son has come back and said he doesn't want to go to the toilet. It's shocking. They may have problems going on in the toilets, but they can't do this, surely. Another said, my daughter has now said she's holding it and not going to the loo, and she's not the only one who said this. I'm disgusted. Another added, if you went shopping and popped in the toilets, looked up and saw one of these, would you be happy to continue? I think not. It's wrong on many levels. One person even said her daughter had walked out as she couldn't face using the toilet. And another said, what's stopping some dodgy person recording inappropriate images of our children? But Mr. Borkhead said protecting the safety of all pupils was a top priority. And he added, for a number of years, we have had CCTV installed in various locations within the school grounds to not only allow us to monitor student behaviour, but also to protect the school, ensuring the safety for everyone in our community. Following some disappointing behaviour from our students, who are not maintaining our high standards of behaviour whilst in the toilet areas, we took the decision to extend the network of cameras to these areas. And I must stress that this is to allow us to monitor who is entering and leaving the communal toilet area. And I can reassure parents and children that no cameras are directed towards sensitive areas, including cubicles or urinals. In a letter to parents, Mr. Borkett stressed the cameras were not of the type that can be rotated. He added, the cameras have been set up to monitor the wash basin areas, entrance hall and communal spaces and are explicitly not directed towards any cubicles or urinals. While some cameras are located over sensitive areas, the type of camera, although in a dome-shaped housing, doesn't provide 360-degree imaging and is not directed into sensitive areas. The cameras may appear to move through the dome, however, but this will simply be the autofocus system, as the camera itself is unable to pan or tilt. There is also no audio. We have also ensured there is clear signage to ensure that all users of the facilities are aware there is CCTV equipment in use. He added, I firmly believe we are not invading any students' privacy and that all children will now be in an even safer environment due to this installation.
He's one of Dudley Zoo's most loved residents, and our orangutan Benji is about to celebrate his 40th birthday. And like anyone reaching that milestone in life, he is to be treated to a right royal knees up. The primate has become one of the zoo's most iconic animals after being admired by thousands of visitors for the past 21 years. Upper Primate Section Leader Pat Stevens said, Benji is one of our real characters at Dudley Zoo, and he deserves a very special celebration for his milestone birthday. He's been here for 21 years and we all love him and his quirks, of which he has quite a few. He loves having his ear tickled, but then he'll try and push your finger up his nose for a scratch. Plus, he's fascinated by our visitors, sparkly jewellery and tattoos, and loves watching people pass by his den window. He's also never without his beloved bread crate and will carry it with him wherever he goes, as well as turning it upright to sit on it so he can see us through the den door. He's very inquisitive. The birthday festivities took place last weekend, ahead of Benji's big birthday on Monday the 6th, with the zoo holding a two-day fundraiser in aid of its £800,000 orangutan enclosure appeal. Visitors who wanted to support the appeal could purchase a charity pin badge or wristbands and could leave their special wishes for the great ape in his birthday card throughout the weekend celebrations. A trail across the zoo's 40-acre site was set to keep families entertained, with the chance to win an adoption package. Prizes include a priceless work of art by Benji, as well as the luxury Chanel Benji cushion worth $19.99, will also be up for grabs in a raffle. But the celebrations would not be complete without birthday cake, with slices of the sweet treat set to be dished out. Miss Stevens added, "We hope to welcome lots of visitors on site over the weekend who want to join us in wishing Benji many happy returns. Visitors can find us outside the Queen Mary restaurant and learn about the plight of these critically endangered species in the wild, as well as discovering more about our fundraising appeal to build a new separate outdoor enclosure for our four Bornean orangutan."
The steep increase in takeaways in Wolverhampton is coming under the public spotlight as part of a six-week consultation. Residents are being encouraged to have their say over plans to limit the proliferation of fast food shops in the city. The new rules will mean that takeaways cannot open within 400 metres around a 5-minute walk of a secondary school, as well as ruling that no more than two can be next door to each other. Under the new plans, they will also be banned from opening in shopping centres or parades where there is already a high percentage. In centres with more than 40 units, no more than 10% will be allowed to be fast food shops. Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet approved draft planning guidance last month, and this has now gone out for public consultation. If adopted, it will supplement existing guidance already used in key areas of the city centre, Bilston and the 3-ton shopping centre on Stafford Road. The guidance will affect new drive-throughs, Chinese and Indian takeaways and pizza, fried chicken, burger and fish and chip shops. It will not affect food and drink retailers such as sandwich shops and bakeries, restaurants, cafes, coffee shops and dessert shops or existing hot food takeaways. The proportion of hot food takeaways in and around Wolverhampton is significantly higher than the national average, with research showing there is more than one hot food takeaway for every 1,000 people. The national average is 0.86 per 1,000. Councillor John Reynolds, Cabinet Member for the City Economy, said, "Fast food outlets are an important component of the local economy, but where they make up a disproportionately high percentage of the retail offer, they can have a negative impact. It's important to stress that this proposed guidance will not affect existing hot food takeaways, and nor does it limit the type of takeaways. This is simply about ensuring that we do not end up with too many of them. I would encourage residents, businesses, and other stakeholders to take part in this consultation and have their say about these proposals. Wolverhampton also has some of the highest levels of obesity in the country. Around 2/3 of adults and nearly half of school children in year 6 are either overweight or obese, significantly higher than the national average, with obesity costing the National Health Service up to £8 billion per year. Councillor Paul Sweet, Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "This is not about the council telling people what they can and cannot eat. This is about achieving an economically viable balance between hot food takeaways and other retailers." addressing the over-concentration of takeaways, protecting vulnerable groups such as secondary school children, and ultimately reducing obesity and poor diet, which is affecting the health and well-being of so many of our citizens. The deadline for responses is 5 p.m. on Monday, December the 11th.
A historic former ironworks in Stourbridge is set to be brought back into use as a base for a heritage centre and healthcare training in a bid to transform the area. An application has been lodged for Riverside House next to the Stourbridge Canal, with more than £80,000 ploughed into it. Buses say they hope to bring the site of historical and national significance back into use as a heritage centre with cafe, restaurant and craft shop selling local produce with a woodland area. The Riverside Stourbridge Community Interest Company would be working alongside adults in health and social care to help them develop confidence and practical skills. Lloyd Stacey, Managing Director, said work would get underway in the next 6 months. He explained, "This is an amazing project that will transform the area. This old ironworks is one of the most important sites in Dudley in terms of historical and national significance. We are taking on the old iron master's house and his estate, along with ancillary workshops, including the remnants of the stables and outbuildings. All being well, we will start building work within the next 6 months and then get everything else in place." Plans put forward at Dudley Council on October the 23rd also detail container facilities, including rest space and a canteen area and small kitchen. Waterless toilets will also be installed. The building will have a round porthole window to match the nearby Lyon Medical Centre and an overhanging green roof to provide extra shelter. Mr. Stacey continued, "So far we have had £82,000 funding from different regional and national funders and also the Council Community Forum. The other side of this is working with adults in health and social care to help develop skills. This is a place where heritage, community and culture can be seriously integrated with provisions for this group. We will also convert shipping containers into kitchen and dining space, and we have lottery funding for waterless toilets." Councillor Rachel Harris said, "We welcome the exciting proposals being put forward and look forward to further discussions about how they might benefit people with autism and mental health problems in Dudley. It comes as a canal side transformation, besides a site began earlier this year. It included removal of graffiti, cutting back of trees and undergrowth, brightening up brickwork and restoring the historic interpretation panel."
Pupils at one of Dudley's larger secondary schools have been told to wear extra clothing after the heating broke down. Ellos Hall Sports College in Lower Gornal has been without full heating since September. Head teacher Alan Jasper admitted school days may have to start later or be closed to some year groups in the event of a cold snap. The main boilers have stopped working, leaving the school, which has around 1,000 pupils, without heating and hot water in some areas. Emergency repairs will take more than 3 months to complete either side of Christmas, but school leaders said temporary heating and hot water would be in place during this time. Mr. Jasper said the boilers had stopped working due to age and wear and tear, and that a grant to cover the £270,000 repairs had been approved 2 weeks ago. He continued, "When the school reopened in September, the two main school heater boilers were condemned due to age and wear and tear. The school immediately applied for an emergency grant to cover the cost of the repairs. As you would expect, we take the education and welfare of our students very seriously, and hence we will endeavour to keep the school open if at all possible during this time. Currently, the situation is monitored every day, and at present there is no need to close the school. We will advise parents and carers when the temporary system is up and running. However, in the meantime, students are advised to wear an additional layer of clothing under their school uniform if required. Over 50% of the school has heating and hot water in areas including the dining hall, sports hall, English block, PE department and sixth form block have not been affected. It comes after it was revealed last month that Ellos Hall was given a zero-star hygiene rating in March after inspectors uncovered poor hot cleaning standards in a kitchen which had no hot water. Hygiene has since been rated good following a re-inspection.
2 care centres have been given a new lease of life after the sale of 4 minibuses raised £20,000. Age Concern run the Elton Daycare Centre in Stourbridge and Green Lane Day Centre in Haileswin. They have been kept up and running after the sales, which saw 3 minibuses sold to charity and another sold off at auction for £2,700 on October the 12th. It follows Age Concern's departure from Mary Stevens Day Centre in Stourbridge after 100% of its service level agreement funding from Dudley Council was removed back in April. Chief Officer Dion Legg said, "It's all sorted. Since we have come out of Mary Stevens Day Centre, I think people thought the whole of Age Concern had closed down. We are still here serving the elderly in Dudley Borough. We have a fantastic service in the Elton Centre and we are still offering daycare 5 days a week, but it's not located in Haileswin. We have vacancies for trustees and we have 3 vacancies. We're a smaller organisation after closing Mary Stevens. We have had to slim down the organisation, but we're still trying to carry on. The minibuses were probably worth more, but we don't feel hard done by. We accept that with happiness. 3 of them went to charities, with one of those to Age UK Dudley and another to Hall Flyers in Womben. The 4th and oldest one went to auction. That was at Brightwells. They were fantastic. They didn't charge us for selling it. Things are very tight. We just could not carry on running 3 centres. It's a long road ahead and we can only try our best. We need more people through the door using our services. We have reserves, but they won't last forever. I think we're a valid organisation that really does meet the needs of the older person in the community. Up for sale was a 2007 Mercedes Sprinter, a 2006 Mercedes Vario, a 2008 Mercedes Sprinter, and a 2009 Ivco Daily. The minibuses were used to transport elderly service users to and from the centre for day trips. The sale follows cuts to Age Concern, had to make 8 staff members after... Sales follow cuts for Age Concern, had to make 8 staff members redundant after losing more than £20,000 a year in funding.
A Dudley businessman has given Russell's Hall Hospital wheelchair campaign a push in the right direction. Mohammed Sagir, who runs Direct Link Communications in Wolverhampton Street, has donated £600 to the big push after collecting the cash from generous customers and town centre businesses. The shop owner, who is also chairman of Voice of Dudley Business, was keen to get involved in the campaign, which aims to raise £30,000 to buy 50 new wheelchairs for Russell's Hall Hospital. Mr. Sagir is no stranger to raising funds for charity. Earlier this year, he raised hundreds of pounds for the hospital's Georgina unit and children's charity Promise Dreams by taking part in 2 sponsored walks. He said he was more than happy to support the great cause, adding, "With the generosity of the local community and businesses, in just a few weeks we raised £600 towards our first chair. I will continue to share information about the campaign on my social media to help the big push reach its target. Our total currently stands at £15,664, but shoppers at Stourbridge's Rye Market Shopping Centre can help boost it by putting their loose change in a new money spinner." Centre manager Kelly Dyer said that the centre was keen to get on board with the campaign and help as much as we could. She added, "Hopefully the money spinner, which is located by Shoe Zone, will help raise funds for the big push. Donations can also be made by dropping into our office at St John's House, Stourbridge, with cash or cheques. Cheques need to be made payable to Dudley Group NHS Charity/Wheelchairs. You can also visit www.justgiving.com/campaigns/charity/Dudley. www.dghc/wheelchairs to make a donation online. Alternatively, text NEWS66 with an amount of £2, £5 or £10 to 70070.
A teenage soldier who died more than six decades ago in a war on terror is to finally be recognised for his service. Private Joseph Anthony Hawker was killed at the age of 19. Joseph Anthony Hawker, from Briley Hill, was one of almost 400 British servicemen who died attempting to put down terrorists in Cyprus in 1956. Called up under conscription, Private Hawker was one of a group of soldiers hurriedly sent to the then British colony to help Ireland Police deal with National Organisation of Cypriot Fighters. But during an operation to capture its leader, Georgios Grievous, Private Hawker died in a woodland fire caused by a mortar bomb. The 19-year-old's death was discovered by his family living in Briley Hill in the pages of a newspaper. Keith Hawker, the one surviving sibling of Private Hawker's seven brothers and sisters, received the Elizabeth Cross on his behalf. It will be presented by John Crabtree, OBE, the Lord Lieutenant of the West Midlands, in Dudley. Mr. Hawker, aged 76, said, "It will be a very emotional day for me. It will bring some closure to his death. It is just so sad I'm the only one left in the family to finally see it. I'm the last man standing. It's a big shame that this did not come many years ago." Private Hawker was born in Lower Valley Road in Briley Hill and attended Horbush School. He left aged 15 and went to work for Stuart Glassworks in Briley Hill. But he was called up to the National Service in 1956, joining hundreds of servicemen to serve in the four-year Cyprus emergency. As part of the 3rd Battalion Parachute Regiment, Private Hawker's job was to assist Ireland Police in taking out the National Organisation of Cypriot Fighters. But in an operation named Lucy Alphonse, where British troops had the group and its leader, Mr. Grievous, trapped in woodland, Private Hawker died in a fierce fire. It was set alight by a mortar bomb explosion. Private Hawker, who had only been called up 4 months before, was buried at Wayne's Keep, the British military cemetery on the island. Brother Mr. Hawker said, "I was 14 at the time and heard about his death while coming back from Briley Hill on the bus. We saw my sister and she said in the newspaper they were reporting that he was one of 19 soldiers who had died. We were devastated. Only weeks before, he had written us a letter saying he was enjoying serving on the island, but said he knew where weapons used against the British were being hidden." Private Hawker has seven siblings: Derek, Keith, Gordon, Christine, Cynthia, Stephanie and Janet, but Keith is the sole survivor. The Elizabeth Cross is an award given to members of the British Armed Forces killed in action. It is granted to their next of kin.
A driver who mowed down a football fan in cold blood and left him to die has been found guilty of murder. Nidal Albaraki drove his Vauxhall Corsa at a group of four friends following an unexplained exchange late at night. After first missing, he turned his car around and accelerated again, striking a 36-year-old Benjamin Morse from behind and catapulting him onto his windscreen. The victim, an avid Arsenal fan, suffered a catastrophic brain injury and later died. Albaraki drove off and abandoned the Corsa. Hours later, he asked a recovery driver to get rid of it in a bid to cover his tracks. But police identified the 21-year-old and he was arrested at his family's home in Foxhunt Road, Halesowen. A jury at Wolverhampton Crown Court found him guilty of murder and seeking to pervert the course of justice. Albaraki showed no sign of emotion as the verdict was read and he was sentenced to a minimum of 15 years in prison. Albaraki's 19-year-old brother, Ahmed, was found guilty of seeking to pervert the course of justice. He disposed of a mobile phone handed to him by his brother during his arrest. He was sentenced to 12 months in prison and a further 2 months for an unrelated matter of possession of cannabis with intent. Judge James Burbage, QC, said, "It is extremely likely that the phone would have assisted the police in the fact that Nidal Albuquerque was driving the car, which he was not prepared to admit to at an early stage. It would have had cell analysis and maybe even text messages from people he knew. Benjamin Morse was murdered in Beach Street, Halesowen, in the early hours of May the 1st. Mr. Morse of Yew Tree Road, Halesowen, and his friends had just been dropped off by a taxi in Bloomfield Street North when they encountered Albuquerque. The group had spent the day drinking and had used cocaine. The jury of 7 men and 4 women took 5 hours and 49 minutes to reach its unanimous verdicts. Ruth Morse, Ben's sister, said, "Ben had a wide circle of friends and the whole community has suffered from his loss. He made me laugh and cry. We were close and his death left a hole in my heart that would never heal. I feel angry and hurt, and my children will grow up without the love and guidance of the uncle who worshipped them. The hurt and loss I feel never goes away. I am fearful that there is a long, hard road to travel over the coming months. I feel I am in constant turmoil and it is never going to end."
And with that final news item, we'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Goodbye from Louise.
And goodbye from Phil.